Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
You're listening to Book Club Babes. Let's get into it.
Me.
I would not record if I did not hear that. Because we've done that before.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Haven't we? Or we just lost it or something?
Something along those lines. A little column A, a little column B.
We're too old for that shit now. We've learned lesson. What is up? How are you? Tell me everything.
Literally, reading anything? No. I'm still Demon Copperhead is long, but it's so good. It's good.
It's emotional.
It's I am sad. I'm happy. I'm like, go do it. You got this, demon.
I know.
Kid but other times you're just like, right? Oh, it's sad. It's sad.
Break. Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah.
But good. Yeah. Anyways, what about you?
Oh, I actually started reading a book. A fucking book. Because I decided to say
a book?
I know. I decided to say goodbye, Funeral Girl. Not interested. DNF'd it. Might go back sometime, but like might not. Who cares? And I started reading a book called Look Closer by David Ellis.
Ooh,
and it is a little bit of a thriller. And
I like that.
I'm enjoying it.
Love that for you.
Yeah. I just need to read thrillers. You know, I just really love them. And I...
Why knock a good thing? Why
right?
Why go looking
when I know.
The book's coming knocking?
I know. I just try to explore other genres. And speaking of other genres, shall we announce?
I was just going to say, you should announce what we're reading
our
next month.
April book. April. Because it was requested a few times, we're going to read The Women by Kristen Hannah.
Oh, shoot.
It's literally rated... Okay, I'm going to tell you. It's got 163,761 ratings. Okay, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rated 4.7.
I mean...
That's so high. That's literally so high.
Almost... I'm almost 5 stars right now. I'm almost getting 5 stars right now.
Right? That's almost 5. That's pretty much, if you were to round, you would round 5.
Duh.
But I will say it is a historical fiction. However, it's like in the 60s historical fiction. So it's not like, what was that game in Tomorrow?
Oh, like Oregon Trail?
Yeah, it's not like Oregon Trail times. Yeah. Exactly.
We're not dying of dysentery?
No, we're not dying of dysentery. No, we are not.
I was really hoping for a little bit of wasting disease.
Next time.
Okay.
We can get that for you next time.
Okay, thanks.
Anyway, this book looks really good, and I'll announce it on IG tomorrow, which means that you'll see it on Instagram before you hear the pod.
Oh, shoot. This is old news.
Well, I just ordered the book today, so.
look at you.
Yeah, and I will say that I told Deb, my boss/friend, and she audibly screamed. Like, she was very excited.
Oh, she's excited.
Yeah,
she's like, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Because she read The Nightingale, which, like, literally everybody has told me to read, which is by Kristen Hannah, and I... have not read it because it's historical fiction, and I was like, I don't think I'm gonna like this.
I don't think it's gonna be for me.
But I'll give this one a try, and if this one's good, perhaps I'll hop on in.
Okay, she might be riding that Hannah train.
Yeah. I mean, why can't she write a historical fiction thriller?
Oh, girl. Maybe there will be some thrilling parts of this.
Some very thrilling parts, true. But I have to say, all of the Kate Quinn books that we read, The Rose Code, and I've read them all. They're like, I enjoy all of them. I really like a strong female character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Alice Network, that was good. Yeah.
In like a historical fiction. So anyway, yeah. Hopefully it's good.
Mm-hmm. literally with nothing else to report, should we talk about the ending of this fucking book?
Oh my God. Oh my God, let's do it.
Okay.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Week four, we're reading chapters 31 to the end, and I start and I end this week.
Yeah, you do. Switcheroony.
Switcheroony. Okay, so here we go. Max is chatting with Lauren Ford, who we learn she runs the Criminal Investigations Unit, CIU, for the Boston area. Max wants her to authorize her lab to run another DNA test to make sure the murder victim was actually Matthew Burroughs. So, like, Max is maybe hopping on this train, but because Philip told him, right? So it's like that Philip is a credible source because he's like essentially incriminating himself to tell this story.
True. Right?
So I bet you Max is like, I should at least look into it. Like,
maybe a little look into it.
Just like a little
look. Little look-see.
Exactly. So Lauren tells Max that they already did a DNA test, even though they didn't have to back then because they already had a positive ID on the victim. He wants to know how they did it. Did they compare the victim's DNA to the mother or the father? And she says she doesn't remember, but that it was a high-profile case and they did not make any mistakes back then. However, then I read this part a few times and I think it is her telling Max. The way the dialogue was written, it wasn't very clear, but it made the most sense that it's her telling Max this. So I'm going to go with that. Okay. But if it's the other way around, it is what it is. But then Lauren tells Max that maybe back then the DNA lab made a few mistakes. And those were the kinds of mistakes where you, quote, suddenly quit your job when an internal investigation starts and move overseas kind of mistakes.
Ooh.
So, like, tell me more, you know? Okay, back with David. David getting off that PJ, private jet.
Mm-hmm.
He's like,
Nikki Fisher hooked him up.
Right? Nikki Fisher hooked him up. Perks of being abducted and being flown on a private jet is that you get to be dropped off on the tarmac and Rachel is already waiting for him there because he doesn't have to fucking check his bags or anything.
What is customs?
Right?
Never heard
exactly.
Of
it. Oh my God, that would be so sick. Tell me that wouldn't be the sickest thing.
Obviously.
Okay, so anyway, he gets in the car. Rachel's like, he's like, tell you later. I need to go see Cheryl. Rachel asks if this still has to do with the fertility clinic, and David says yes. He knows that it is not a coincidence. Rachel says she needs to clear the air about something, and this is when she tells David that she made the appointment for Cheryl and that it was under her own name. She tells David that she really didn't agree with Cheryl doing this behind David's back. And when Cheryl didn't go through with it, Rachel was the one that called and left the voicemail on Cheryl and David's answering machine, posing as if she was from the clinic, which I love because I did think about that. I was like, why would the clinic have Cheryl's number if it was Rachel? And she's like, it says that to David. Like, if it was my identity, why would the clinic have my phone number? She's the one who fucking did it.
Yep.
David asks Rachel if Cheryl knows that he's coming, and she's like, nope, sorry, surprise.
Surprise. Rachel and David are literally outside the building where Cheryl works now.
Knock, knock.
Knock, hello.
Fugitive on the run.
Nothing to see here. She'd talk about how Cheryl used to love working at Boston General. Rachel fills him in that she couldn't stay after he was convicted because she was a distraction. And also, P.S., she's Dr. Dreesen now. She took his last name also to help, like, smooth things over with your Yikes. Conviction and everything. You know, just before we go in. Anyways.
Just a couple things you should know.
Just going to catch you up here a little bit. Oh, if we're going to go see her, you should probably know. Mm-hmm. But Ronald... fucking Cheryl's husband is in her office talking with his wife, essentially.
Not Ronald.
So obviously David remembers Ronald very well because he just wanted to be friends with fucking Cheryl, but it was clear that that's not what was going on. It was clear to everybody, and that it was, he's kind of like laughing at the fact now, LOL, like harmless work texts. Okay, sure.
Oh, man. It sucks. That situation sucks.
Ronald is leaving. Rachel diverts his attention, letting David pass unnoticed, essentially. He enters her office, and like without hesitation, Cheryl knows exactly who it is. And they embrace, they start crying. But David does not have time for tears today. He has a million questions. He needs A's too right now.
Right now.
He's trying to convince Cheryl that it's Matthew. She does not believe that it's true. And she's like, I know, because we literally buried our son in the fucking ground. And she says that she still's believing that he did it, but has never actually blamed him for what he did.
Oof, yeah.
So David asks his first question and is like, what's the deal with the Berg Fertility Clinic? Obviously it has something to do with Matthew, so just tell me. Cheryl says that he's right. She should have never have gone, and that everything has been her fault, essentially. And she starts breaking down, which David remarks that she's never seen her like this in his life, and they've been together since high school. So and he even said that she didn't even break down like this at Matthew's funeral, because she's always someone who's been in control. Anyways, she is going through all of this because it's very hard for her to bring up the truth, and that she actually did go ahead with the sperm donor and had a transfer of his sperm. Yikes.
Yes. Of a donor sperm?
Yes, donor sperm, not David. Yes, exactly.
This book is a fucking roly right? coaster, like a whiplash.
Yes. She is, like, she feels, this is like kind of what she's surmising. She feels like he knew this whole time. And then soon after that, he had started sleepwalking again. And then he was like filled with anger. And then she believes that he then went and killed the son because of her betrayal. Because he was so changed, essentially, like he completely different person after this. David's like, I don't have time for this. And that doesn't matter anymore. Please just like look at the picture. Like, I don't got time to try and like tell you that that's not what I thought. Blah, blah, blah. Miscommunication.
Yeah, he's
did
like,
not kill him.
Like,
just look at the picture, please.
Watch here. So yeah. Moving on.
I'm literally waiting for the cops to show up. So he's just like pleading, please look at the picture. But then fucking Ron busts in, like the fucking Kool-Aid man himself, and is like, what the fuck? Cheryl tells David to leave and that Ron will not say anything.
Interesting. So did Cheryl look at the photo?
No, I don't think she's like adamant that he's like, no, I don't see it. I don't see it. Oh, I was just thinking how interesting the dynamic is that usually you would think that, I guess that's just gender roles, but like, obviously you would think that a mother would be more willing to be like, this is my son. Like, I need to do anything for them. But like, it is strange that she is still, I guess he's talking about the control, but like, it is interesting.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to say, like, I guess she's more of like a realist and she saw the body. So she thinks.
Literally, I buried it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that it was her son, because who could construct
come up with this fucking thing?
Like, that's fucked. So she's obviously like, no, I saw it with my own eyes. Like,
yes.
And you're kind of crazy. You've been in jail for 5 years.
Yeah. Kind of not going to like follow you around right
credible?
Now.
Yeah.
But. You do, you sis.
Mm-hmm. I like how they had it was a nice reunion though. Like it was like they nobody
true
like
ooh. True, and there was no like. I do like that she was like, I've never blamed you. Yeah, I thought it was you, but like I've never blamed you for it.
Okay, let me tell you what happens next in this fucking book. Lauren calls Max. She's like, "Hey, remember me? We don't have a hit on the DNA yet, but." We also aren't finding any sort of match for the murdered boy's DNA or any like missing reports that fit that description. She's like, it's not adding up. So we got to be honest with ourselves. It has to be Matthew in that bed. Max is like, okay, cool. I appreciate your opinion. Please still run the paternity test. Sarah approaches Max and tells him they have to go, that David just left the hospital in New Jersey. All right, now we're over with Hayden. So Hayden is justifying to Pixie why he took Matthew/Theo to the amusement park. He's like, I didn't run it by you because I knew that you would say no. And she's like, literally case in point. Like, this is why I would have said no.
Literally? No.
Like, this is exactly why. I don't understand. Like, why don't you get it? Anyway. So then she starts remembering the night that Hayden brought Theo home. And she's thinking about how there is pretty much a way. She's like kind of waxing and waning on poetics about all this sort of shit. But I'm not. She's essentially thinking about how there's pretty much a way to justify any decision being made and how you will always do that exact thing for your family. So you can make up reasons and justification for anything that validates what you've done. It's true. You really, really can.
True. Exactly. You can.
And I think that's how, like, people who are mentally ill are, like, able to live with themselves because they justify it.
Yeah. The delusion of it all.
Yes, them delulus. Okay, so she's saying to us, if we can understand that, we might understand why Gertrude did what she did that day. And I'm like, excuse me? What did she do that day?
What was she doing? Pixie, tell me what you're doing, Gertie.
Mm-hmm. Hello. And then she proceeds to tell Hayden that him and Theo need to GTFO of there. Like, calling the chopper, get on it and go. Okay.
Get to the chopper.
Yes. Exactly. Okay, Max and Sarah are getting to the hospital when Max gets a phone call. Lauren's like, hey, and she gives him the paternity test results. We aren't privy to those, so yet. They go in the hospital and they start talking with Cheryl, and Max is like, what did David say to you? And Cheryl's like, nothing. And again, he's like, why is everybody lying to me? Like, literally, why?
What did I do?
Right? He's like, why are you lying? Like, anyway. Max looks at Cheryl and says, your ex-husband, he's not Matthew's father, is he? Cheryl denies this. But Max fills her in that they had a paternity test done on the murdered boy and that David is not the father. He accuses her of the father being Ronald. She says no, and that's when she starts to cry. And then she said that David is right and that Matthew is alive. This is when she realizes that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. That's so complicated, though. In my brain, it hurts.
Yeah, it is complicated.
Because, like, why don't you just test mother and father's DNA? Mm-hmm. If Cheryl's fucking DNA isn't in that child, you know that it is 100% not their child. If the question of the father actually being the father is on the table, why test his? Like,
true. Test both. At least, yeah, you got to do both. You got to do both.
Fuck, whatever.
Fuck, whatever.
Because, like, this just leaves him, this just leaves Max with more to figure out. Whereas if he had have just tested Cheryl's DNA and it came back negative.
True.
They'd then be like, hey, this is not Matthew.
What the fuck? Yes.
Yeah,
true.
Unless, like, unless you gave away your baby or something, like, because you birthed it. So.
Yeah. True. That is a very good point. Okay. David is looking for an old email from like 8 years ago. And all while he's telling Rachel that Cheryl went through with the sperm donor and he still believes that Matthew is his son, though, even though not necessarily biologically.
Oh, right. He's like, I don't give a fuck. That's my boy.
That's my boy. That's my boy.
Let's go, boys.
Let's go, boys. So Rachel's attorney coming in clutch with the hookups again. They do a switcheroo with the cars and there was new burners plus a hammer to smash the old ones left in the car. Rachel treats fucking David to a Whopper. Not necessary to the whole story at all, but I had to shout out a Whopper for Caitlin.
Literally so good. I'm kind of hoping Marty's suggests BK for dinner tonight.
So then Rachel tells David she has news and that Hayden has sent the pictures through. David starts searching while she's driving. Rachel's attorney calls again and tells them that Rachel is now officially a person of interest and that there is an APB out for them both now with Rachel's new like do and everything.
Oh, they're hot commodities.
Yes. Before hanging up, her attorney's like, P.S. David is considered extremely dangerous and they will not hold back or hesitate to shoot. And essentially dead clients don't pay their bills. So like, don't die, please.
I love that. I really don't care about like you as a person, but I do care about your money. So
yes. So, and I've done a lot for you. So
yeah, honestly, I even supplied a hammer. That's my type of attorney.
Yes.
I would think of everything too.
Okay. David.
Oh, you're not done.
No, I think this was my long chapter, so I apologize. Okay. David asks Rachel if she thinks that Irene could help them since they're the only ones who have a confirmed photo of Matthew. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure. Just me, person of interest, just call her up and be like, hey, what up? So then David's just like, well, we'll just show up at her door. No big deal. I've got a solution for you.
Yep.
They're like going back and forth on yes, no, maybe so. And then in the end, they're just like, well, we'll just head over there and see what happens.
They've got nowhere else to go.
Exactly. Then rewind, switch it and reverse it. We go back to when fucking Gaio gets a call from an orphanage saying that baby Milo has been left in a public bathroom, to die. Essentially, he had some sort of fetal inherited condition called melanin syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that it's rarely you survive past the age of 5. But a member of the one of the many generous donor families from America heard about Milo. The workers there are like, that's strange, but okay, because like they pay our bills, so I'm not gonna say anything. Little do they know that it's not strange at all, and that Hayden had put in a request that if a boy matching this size and physical description that he should be notified. Mm-hmm.
And then when
Hayden finds out that this boy is in very poor health, he becomes even more interested. And obviously, you wouldn't say boo because they get in the money from them. So we find out that Hayden did all he could for Milo. No expense was spared. They went on amazing adventures, vacation, anything the kid wanted. Hayden gave it to him, essentially. Yeah. Fuck this guy. Fuck this guy. I hate him.
Fuck this
okay.
guy, for sure.
Fuck this. This is where he's even worse. So Hayden is rationalizing to himself that if he hadn't gotten involved, that Milo would have been dead long before. And thanks to him, that even though he had limited days, they were filled with happiness and fun. And that he feels he should have even be commended to take on a child like that, because really he didn't need to do that. He could have just taken any kid off the street that wouldn't have been missed.
I can't. I cannot.
So he is like convinced that he's done the right thing. And all this while he's waiting for the exact right time when Milo was the perfect size and weight, and Milo started suffering again. So what does Hayden do? He hops them on a private jet, get the PJ again. They head to Massachusetts. He's given the kid Milo a sedative, takes him to another boy's bedroom who also has been given a sedative, and they do the switcheroo.
This is so fucked.
Yes. And we find out that he had already put sedative in David's whiskey, so he does not need to worry about the father. They go into detail about the murder of the child. I will not read that. La, la, la. Obviously, after that, Hayden has instant panic and regret and is like, Pixie, need your help. Of course, mm-hmm. Pixie's like, obviously, I love money and my family's name will not be sullied.
Mm-hmm.
So she sends Stefano to make sure that fucking Hayden didn't fuck up. She makes Hayden take a paternity test and tells him that he is indeed father of this kid. Theo mm-hmm. is his son. Pixie tells him that they need to leave. They've got to skedaddle. They're well overstayed. They're welcome now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've got to go. Goodbye.
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, yes, yes. She's like, you just murdered someone. So, mm-hmm. and kidnapped a child. So,
yes, you've got to go. Goodbye.
Let's move you. Let's relocate you. Oh, my God. Okay, so now we know what actually happened. And it is super fucked up. So that's
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
We're back with Rachel and David, who are pulling up to the Longleys' house while David hides under a blanket, super casual. They have both of their phones on, like, walkie-talkie style, and Rachel is like, I'm leaving the keys in the car because if something goes wrong, you should just take it and bounce. Okay, so Rachel knocks on the door and is greeted by fucking Irene. And their discussion is exactly as fucking awkward as we predicted it would be last week when we were talking about this.
Yeah.
Like, what would you do? Like, are you, you're like, I really like this photo. Can I just have it? That is happening. But 7 billion times worse because Rachel and David are both wanted by the police. So this is like super ox. She's like, hey, Irene, I just want to know if the photos are digital and if you have copies that you can show me. Irene is like super creeped out and she's trying to really get out of the situation. Like, she's like, just give me a sec. And David is hearing this all on the walkie-talkie. And obviously we already know he's a desperate man. So he hops out of the back of the car with the gun and insists on seeing the photos. Irene's like, okay, I don't really have an option, do I?
David, I'm being held at gunpoint.
Right? Like, she's literally like, you are armed and dangerous. I guess this is what I'm doing. Although David can't stop thinking about the PTSD he's currently leaving on Irene. Like, he's like, I don't know, you feel bad because you know he's just a desperate guy and he like doesn't want to be doing this, but he like feels like he doesn't have a choice. Anyway, so she eventually shows them the photos to Rachel and David. They're going through the pics. They find the one they're looking for. Because they're digital photos, obviously taken on like a pretty sick DSLR, they got some fucking zoom width.
There's res. They've got it.
Yes, they've got the resolution. Woo! You'd probably want to print these photos real big, right?
Probably. Probably at least 10 feet tall.
Nice. Yeah, life size. Okay. So they zoom in and they're like, yes, this is 100% Matthew. They know it. There's no denying it. Rachel's looking closer at the photo because she's like trying to get some other hints or information. And she gasps because she realizes something. She sees a ring and it's a Lemhall University ring. And it is attached to the hand that is holding Matthew's. Yo,
no way,
it's about to go down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so we're with Max and Sarah now. Max tells Sarah, oh, you already went kind of over this part, that he doesn't think that David actually really killed his son. Sarah's like, literally don't care. Our job is to literally capture him and then the court will hold, like, do the rest. Like, this is nothing to do with me. She threatens to get Max removed from this case because clearly he's not doing the job of capturing. He's now going to try and figure this out. And then that thought is stopped because they get a call that Rachel and David were just at Irene's house. So they're like, what the hell? We got to go.
Yikes.
Eyes on their house.
Yikes.
Okay. Now we're back with David and he's like, what was I supposed to do? Like, I couldn't have like kept her tied up or shoot her. Literally her children were coming home like within minutes.
He's like, I just like rushed the process along. Okay.
They have to go to the Payne's house now. Like he knows that this is where it's all leading to now. Rachel can't seem to understand why Matthew would be with Hayden, and she's wondering if maybe she should call him or the police first. David's like, right, we're just going to call the cops on one of the richest families in America. Cool.
Yeah, that'll work.
He tells Rachel that there's an old email that might confirm suspicions and might help in the situation. Rachel's like, do you want to talk about it? It's from the fertility clinic. He's like, no time. We've got the plan. Okay. This is what we're going to do. You're going to call Hayden and say, I'm on my way over. I'll be there in 10 minutes. She tells then Hayden that someone is trying to set David up. So then that's why she wants to come over and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that she believes that Matthew is dead and blah, 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 all this. Mm-hmm. But someone's framing him.
Which is essentially David, true for the first half of the story.
True. Yes. Exactly. So not really. Yeah, she's just stretching the truth a bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
David then goes and hides in the back again. Once she's let through the gates, David does his like tuck and roll out. They're hoping that the cover of the trees will hide him. And his next job in the plan is to just like poke around essentially and see if David can spot anything. And hopefully Matthew. This is where David sees Hayden greeting Rachel.
Okay, so we're with Pixie. And as she gets out of the pool, Stefano is waiting for her. And he tells her that Rachel has just arrived. Pixie asks him if they have a plan to make both Rachel and David disappear, like leave. And he says yes. But he wants Pixie's approval to make this happen. And he clarifies what he means by like disappear, which is like dead. And Pixie approves this. So we know where her morals lie. Super cool. Okay, now back to where you left off. Hayden greets Rachel with a hug. Rachel is thinking about how she thought she knew him, but she really only knew the version of him that she wanted to see. And that she did have glimpses of his violence in the past, but it was never like at her, right? It was always veiled in, I almost feel like Hayden has karma points. Like he runs his life in like a karma system. So he thinks like, oh, I did this like really awesome thing for this boy. So like my karma is really good. I can take this other one and I'll be fine. And then he takes the other one and he's like, I'll just give it like an awesome life. It's going to have a better life than it would have before. So like that's, I did the right thing. So anyway, the karma points are that like he saved her from a rape. So he's not like, he can't be a bad guy, right? Okay, so Hayden says he wants to walk the gardens with her first, and he starts fucking talking about all this bullshit. It's like privilege, blah, 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 God, blah, blah, blah. Rachel asks to cut the bullshit and says, Hayden, I know you have Matthew. Mic drop.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel tells him that David has come up with a theory, and that theory goes like this. Although Hayden scoffed at this, obviously, like, David, like, he's so fucking jealous of him. So here's the theory. When Rachel, air quotes, went to the clinic, Hayden was notified. Hayden was upset that Rachel was getting donor sperm and thought it should have been him. So he just casually sets up a donation of his own sperm. Rachel's like, what did you think would happen? Because clearly that's a psychotic thing to do. And Hayden tells her that he thought she would have his son, that he would tell her about it at a later date, and they could be a family together. He's delusional, this guy, for real.
Wow.
For real.
Wow.
Like, that's so fucked. Okay. He found out when Rachel was never pregnant, but Cheryl was, what had actually happened. And that's when he started waiting and watching and planning. He knew that David's whole fucking life was falling apart. Rachel then accuses Hayden of having killed a child that night, because we do know there was a dead child in the bed. And this is where Hayden explains that, no, that was why it took so long. He had to give this kid an amazing life first. Rachel's probably like, you are so fucked. Like, I don't even have any words for you. You are fucked. He says how after he took Matthew, Pixie had a paternity test done and it came back as his. So he started raising Matthew / Theo. Rachel tells Hayden that he can fix it now and give Matthew back. And Hayden is all like, nope. And then he's all like, and if anybody says anything, I'll just say that Cheryl and I had an affair. Like, who's gonna fucking not believe me? And then David is all like, hey guys, and he's also like, where the fuck is my son?
Okay, so along with asking fucking Rachel or fucking Hayden where his son is, he tells Rachel to call the cops, but turns out he made her like hand over her phone. Even Hayden is like, let's make a deal, we can make this work. He's
joint
like
custody.
Theo, yeah, joint something like that. He is like, literally, Theo is not your son, but I've always felt bad for you taking the fall, so like, let me help you out with a brand new identity. David's like, hell's no, fuck you, and grabs him by the throat. Like, obviously there's guards at their fucking house, and the guard is like, not so fast, and he's holding the gun now. He's like, better let him go. David's like, better not do what you just asked me to do, and I better use Hayden as literally a human shield, and pulls out his own gun and then shoots that security guard. Another guy rushes them, shoots him as well. During this, Hayden is able to run inside, which they follow after them. Inside, Hayden is yelling for Theo, so obviously they give chase, and there all of a sudden David sees Matthew, aka Theo, aka whatever, son, in the fucking hallway. And he remember back to like first or second week when he was in New York Times Square, and he's like, sensory overload. He has this like whole like massive like sensory overload by seeing his like actual son in the flesh.
Oh my god, that'd be so fucked. Think about it though. Like,
yes, right?
You were literally in jail for 5 years for having killed this boy that you yourself are not even entirely sure, but you're fairly certain you didn't do it, and then you fucking see him.
Right? Okay. Then Hayden is like trying to defuse the situation, is like, meet Theo, meet my friend David. It's time for us to go. La la la. David's like, I don't think so. Enter Pixie. She's like, what's your plan, David? We've already called the cops. And well, since we're rich, we're friends with the cops. So you'll be rotting in Briggs and we'll have Theo. Where's your evidence? Hayden is like, literally, if you did a DNA test, it would show I'm the father. And then David's like, no, no, no. Remember that email from fucking 8 years ago? Turns out, because David never truly believed his wife that she didn't go through with the sperm donation when she lied originally, he had a paternity test done on fucking Matthew. So, turns out both of those tests came back positive. Now Pixie's like, never mind, let me just fucking Homer Simpson out of here with Theo, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, she's like, I mean, potato, potato.
But he's like, well, you won't shoot me. I'm a little old lady. La, la, la.
He's like, but you know what I did do to a little old lady? I fucking hit her in the face with the butt of my gun. So
exactly. Watch out. Then Hayden is all like, what are you talking about?
Wait, what?
Then there's like, all the sounds are like coming together. There's sirens, there's helicopters for them to leave. Like, it's a big action-packed scene right now. Mm-hmm, he's mm-hmm. just like, you aren't the father, essentially.
Oh no, Jerry Springer.
Yes, Jerry Springer up in the house. It's Maury Povich all over the fucking Payne estate. There's like squad cars rushing to the house. Pixie's like, it doesn't matter, Hayden. Take the fucking boy and get on the helicopter. And this is when Matthew speaks up and says no. And that he wants to go and wants to know what's going on here. Pixie tries to tell him it's still a game, that they're playing a game right now. And he's just like, how stupid do you think I am? Mm-hmm. And then turns to fucking David and is like, you're my father. Yes, you are
my father.
And not like a question. He said it was like a statement. Like, this is true. He obviously is just like, yes, I am your father. He kidnapped you when you were young. And this is when the first bullet hits his body.
Who's bad?
Fucking David.
Oh, ouch.
Ouchie.
R.I.P. David.
R.I.P. David.
Bye. Kidding. Imagine that's how we ended it. And like everybody just thought that we didn't read the same version.
Oops.
Okay, no, because we get a little fucking update because I'm going to tell you about 8 months later. Let's fucking go.
Let's go. Let's do this.
David is standing at his father's graveside because his dad did die, RIP, and he's standing beside his Aunt Sophie, and Adam and Philip are pallbearers. Turns out David was shot uno, dos, tres, three times at the Payne estate, and Matthew was the reason why they stopped shooting. Because he was like, no, my dad.
Yeah.
Matthew is also there too, and he is on the other side holding David's hand. Afterwards, like after the fucking funeral and everything, Sophie asks him about Rachel. And David tells her that it's still early days.
Excuse me.
I was hoping. You know what? That's perfect. I was fucking hoping for that. I'm not mad about that. Because like get like romantic during all of that.
Yeah. I felt like I could feel it coming, but like, because she's always had like
Always had a crush on him. Totes. And but like he's obviously always loved Cheryl, but like now she's not an option. So
collecting siblings is the next best.
You gotta do what you gotta do. Max has shown up to the whatever funeral and has news to share, but he's like, I'm not really sure this is the right time. But David's like, tell me right now. So Max is like, okay, cool, that's what I thought. We may have an ID on the victim that was found in Matthew's bed. Turns out there's an orphanage overseas that the Payne family runs. We all know how that fucking goes down. We also find out that it took 3 months for David to be freed. It's not like a fast process when you're in prison, which I've heard and sounds terrible.
Oh my God. Imagine being like, I literally just found my son because he was kidnapped and I've been in prison, but I better go back for 3 months.
I've been in prison for his murder, who's literally alive, that I just found by myself. Thanks to, like, thank you, nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah, it's a nobody except for Rachel. Fuck.
Fuck.
Thanks to nobody.
Ain't nobody done nothing for me.
Exactly. Okay. And we also find out that Philip and Adam both lost their jobs. Sounds about right. Not mad about that. Nikki Fisher is an unexpected guest at this funeral, but he had shown up the night before and asked David to tell him everything. So he did. We find out that Gertrude and Hayden are not serving prison sentences because wealth.
Rich. Because rich.
David tells him everything. We find out that Gertrude and Hayden are not serving prison. I already said that. So Nikki is not happy with this. And when he's at the ceremony the next day, he nods at David to let him know that the deed has been done. And it sends shivers down David's spine.
Yeah.
What do you think he did? Do you think he killed them?
I think he planted evidence. Like, you can't turn around. You can't turn around on it. Like, he should be serving sentence. Like, I feel like being in jail would be worse than just being murdered.
Yeah, I love that. And because he's already done that.
And, like, his dad did the same thing to his son, too. Like, he did it. Everybody knows he did it. You admitted he did it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to plant the evidence so that he goes. It's kind of like
that.
It's
love that. I was thinking it was going to be like an RIP thing, which was a lot, but I much prefer that. So I'm going to think it's that. Okay. Guess who else is at the funeral? Ronald.
Tell me.
Ronald is there. Yes. So is Cheryl. They are outside in the backyard with their 4-month-old daughter, Ellie, and Matthew is there as well. Matthew, they ended up getting joint custody of Matthew. So he spends 1 week with Cheryl and Ronald and 1 week with David and Rachel. David says that Ronald has a beautiful daughter. It seems like he's making the amends. They're doing this like family thing because they have to. Matthew is okay, except he does have nightmares. David does appreciate how Hayden treated him well, at least. The very fucking least. David stands there and watches Matthew, who's all like loving on Ellie because he loves being a big brother. And he is so happy to be here right now and imagines that maybe his father is there too. Aww. The end. The end.
That was a good ending. What do you give it? What are you going to give it?
I don't know. I want to just say 5 stars because I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking,
like maybe 4.5, but
I was gonna say 4.5. I really liked it too. It was a good one. There was like, obviously it was a bit far-fetched at the end, but like the also was it far-fetched. Was great. I was on for the ride.
Yeah, I liked it. I just liked how it was written.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the little bow at the end. It was just a good book.
True.
Sped through the chapters. Like I was always excited to read it. So that's when I know it's a good book.
That's when you know. That's when you know.
When you know, you know.
When you know,
when
you
know. You know. Yeah. Anyway, cool.
Cool. I like that. I like my little theory that that's what happened to Hayden. Goodbye.
He needs to go to
prison
jail.
For
I wonder,
life.
Like, what kind of evidence they could plant. Whatever he wanted, I guess. Because technically, he killed somebody. So, murder.
So, literally, murder.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, murder.
Mm-hmm. Pixie, she's just, I don't know.
Yeah, she just like,
well, murder too. She fucking okayed him to kill Rachel.
True.
And I'm sure she's done that before. Like that can't be the
true.
First time. I like
good
how
book.
Nikki tied into it, like, and the fatherhood tied into it. Like
true.
I like how it all tied together nicely. It wasn't like messy or complicated.
It was well thought out for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I liked it. I'd recommend it.
5 out of 5. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Please join us over at the Book Club Babes Facebook group for book discussions and to make your book recommendations. or on Instagram at bookclubbabes.pod.
If you'd like to reach out to us directly, you can email us at bookclubbabes.pod@gmail.com or contact us on our website at bookclubbabes.ca. If you love the Book Club Babes podcast, please tell a friend about us. And until next time,
bye! Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.